Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 142, episode 2 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness and say, officially, off the top, fuck the Koch brothers, fuck Fox News, fuck Blake Neff, I guess is the name of the head writer for Tucker Carlson, who was busted writing racist stuff.
Had the gig of his dreams. Ooh. And let it get right through his racist little fingertips.
Yeah. Fuck Zuckerberg, fuck Jeff Bezos, and fuck J.K. Rowling. It's Tuesday, July 14th, 2020. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. I was the clear crack knight, a mere white dude. Jack O'B was on the street trying to consume some tent for the eve so the Cokes could go get fucked. Just talking on the mic, podding all alone. Then I hit up my friend, Her Majesty, on a mission trying to find Mr. Miles of G with Hosnier every day all week. All you hoes know what's up with TDZ. That is courtesy of Walter Chestnut. And I am thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Yes, I want tuna subs. A sub made of fish is a foot long just for me. Hanging out the subway all day, tuna all day. Bring that tuna to me. Yeah. Okay, so thank you so much to Walter Chestnut. At Water Chestnut on Twitter. You know who you are for that Scrubs inspired. That was also.
Yeah, that was
all the way from Vancouver, British Columbia. Come those twin AKAs. Yeah.
Miles, how you doing?
Good. Hydrating.
Kicking off for you. Yeah.
Oh, you know,
go for
California,
a run this morning?
California is shut back up, baby.
Yeah. Shut her down.
That's really the. I don't know. I mean, I don't think I was really living as if it were open anyway, but more just like at the absolute, this is the waking nightmare of 2020 America.
Yeah. Well, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the very talented Mr. Oz Wollershin.
Rather Mr. Oz Wollershin than the talented Mr. Ripley, but thank you for having me on.
Thanks for being here, Oz? Man.
I'm about as well as can be, as you guys were mentioning. It's obviously a rather difficult time in lots of ways for lots of people. So I'm feeling grateful, but also tired.
Yeah. Where are you broadcasting to us from at the moment?
I'm broadcasting to you from continental Europe. But I left the States about 2 months ago. So
oh, why? What happened?
Well, funny enough, my girlfriend and family are here, and you know what? It's strange being a kind of insider outsider and somebody who moved to the States 10 years ago and always right. somebody who's had so much admiration for the States and jumped through quite a lot of hoops, frankly, to be able to stay there for 10 years.
Now, why'd you use the past tense when you said had a lot of admiration for the States?
Well, it's a difficult moment,
isn't it? He
figured
it out,
it?
Jack.
I mean,
damn it! they figured it out.
I think a lot of the hypocrisy and violence that has been required to keep the American dream alive is being very radically mm-hmm. exposed for better. Mm-hmm. But these revolutions in consciousness and perhaps more than consciousness don't tend to go off too easily. And I think in the background as well is the fact that there's anyway this America-China power shift going on, which kind of exacerbates this authoritarian tendencies and neurosis about status. And I think it's just a very difficult cocktail of things right now in the land of the free and the home of the brave.
Yes. And we use the air quotes for free and brave and land. Yes.
That was kind of beautiful. We should ask people who aren't panicking in the middle of the apocalypse to describe what they see from a distance more often, because that was well put.
It's always like nice to hear because it's so eloquent and accurate, and I'm like, yeah, man. And then I'm like, oh fuck, I'm there right now. Right. Yeah, okay, so we gotta open our eyes a little bit.
That's the reason I'll come back, though, is because you get way too much credit even now in the States for being British. So that's irresistible inducement to come back.
Right.
All right. Well, we are going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners a couple of the things we're talking about today. One thing we're talking about is one location in these United States where everything is just a-okay, and that is Disney World. Just the happiest place on earth. Everybody's smiling, wearing their masks, social distancing. They opened up this weekend, it looks good from where I'm sitting. So we're gonna talk about that. We're gonna talk about just a bunch of racist shit. There is a white supremacist who was found with guns and bombs in their car. One of those news stories that were it any other ideology would have been a big news story. We're going to talk about car rammings, which is a form of terrorism that is seeing a spike. We're going to talk about millionaires begging to be taxed. We're going to get our white supremacy fuckery roundup. And if we have time, we're going to talk about lead poisoning, the lead poisoning theory of crime in these United States. And I'm going to ask the question, is it just crime? Are there other things that were caused by the fact that the baby boomers grew up in a lead poisoned environment? All of that, plenty more. But first, Oz, we like to ask our guest, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
Well, I am working on a podcast at the moment called Forgotten, The Women of Juarez, about this string of unsolved murders in Juarez, right across the border from El Paso, Texas. And I have a reporting partner called Monica, who is from El Paso and has spent 15 years reporting on the story. And one of the interesting things about El Paso is that Spanglish is the language of the town. So people start their sentences in English and end them in Spanish, or vice versa. And I have a rather rudimentary command of Spanish, but I've been taking Spanish lessons on Skype once a week to try and improve my grasp and try and understand a bit more about what's going on. And so one word in particular I Googled is metido. And metido means involved or trapped. And it's an important word in Juarez because it signifies how organized crime, the cartel, and other powerful interests keep people silent and keep people complicit in all kinds of crimes. And so I think the phrase I was more familiar with before was plata o plomo from Pablo Escobar, meaning silver or lead, the bullet or the bribe. But metido is what happens after that, and the consequences in a society are rather horrific.
So they get the, you mean once they take the bribe, they're sort of involved and complicit, and therefore they just, it's sort of a sunk cost where they feel like they can't turn around?
Exactly. And I think there's a tendency, a psychological tendency of doubling down and down and down and down. So, you know, it might start with, hey, can you watch this corner? Or, you know, hey, can you smuggle this package? But once you have a connection with the beast of organized crime in Juarez, the logic of it tends to be, you know, deathly, literally. And so, you know, it's interesting to, you know, we think about people in the cartel or an organized crime who, you know, are of inherent evil. And certainly when we see some of the things they do, that's what it looks like. And for some, they probably are psychopaths, but there's also this sort of social consequence of violence, the normalization of violence and the small steps towards violence, which have been going on horrifically in Juarez for many years, but which also offer some kind of warning, I think. There was a journalist who called Juarez a postcard from the future or a laboratory of our future in 1995. And so that's one of the subtexts of the podcast is, you know, what happens when things are allowed to go to hell, when the judiciary is no longer independent, when journalists are murdered, and you end up seeing the most vulnerable people in society being murdered.
Wow. That show is up. People can go listen to it right now, right?
That's right. Yes, we're on episode 8 of 10, so the mystery is unraveling.
Yeah, it's pretty mind-blowing, and you guys are great storytellers. What is something you think is underrated?
I think 1984 by George Orwell is underrated. And I'm only saying that because I'm reading it for the first time right now, having used the word Orwellian and the phrase 1984 for the last 20 years. I thought it was time to read that book. And it is phenomenally prescient. It's a book written in 1949, which talks about telescreens, these screens that are with us all the time, which basically monitor us and send propaganda our way. I mean, this was before Orwell had probably even seen a television, that he'd basically predicted cell phones. And secondly, you know, unfortunately, sorry to be a bit bleak again, but this critique of what happens when a society becomes authoritarian, when, you know, we lose the freedom of expression and even of thought, how difficult it is to resist, and also how, you know, it's like the frog in the pot, you know, it's kind of, you don't realize how hot it is until, you know, it's too late to jump out.
Yeah, I think like right now, it's happening where people are looking at a TV screen where a president who's, by most measurable standards, not fucking here, is like laughing as hundreds of thousands of people die. And everyone's just kind of like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like the reaction is just sort of this nihilistic acceptance of it. Power. It's like, it's a very unique thing, especially when you take a second to really kind of like read out loud or think out loud what like the sort of statistics we're looking at day by day and what the behavior is of the supposed leadership in the country.
And the past, it's hard. I mean, it's hard to know, you know, how to be a citizen. Obviously in the immediate term, protest is very important and achieving great things. But what is the, you know, is there a revolution coming? I mean, let's say the best case scenario in the 2020 election is Joe Biden becoming president. Is he and his cabinet going to address the fundamental structural issues that have got us here? I mean, he's described himself as a transition candidate, but you know, it's we could do, I think, with something more powerful than transition or stability, yeah, to rally around right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of people were pointing out to me on Twitter, just in response to kind of some of the conversations we were having about the United States and United States being very capitalistic and sort of drenched in this capitalistic ideal. But a lot of the things that we're talking about that currently exist in the U.S. are more either authoritarian or oligarchical like institutions that aren't capitalist, because a capitalistic, you know, system of government or society is meritocratic, and we just don't have that in even remotely right now.
No, it's so extraordinary that, I mean, the social mobility in the US is, you know, is historical lows, the accumulation of wealth amongst the richest people at historical highs. I mean, I was thinking about the end of the Soviet Union in 1991, because there's this extraordinary story about the last cosmonaut who went up to space when it was still the Soviet Union, and then couldn't come back because there was no more Soviet Union to bring him home. So he was circling around until finally Germany paid for him to come home to a different world. And I was thinking about the space race, because we just had, you know, SpaceX send two NASA scientists into orbit. And it's like, you know, that was a great moment for Trump and Pence, and they talked about space. But they were standing there gloating over the outsourcing of NASA to private industry. And it's like, how can this be something to celebrate?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's sort of the what it's all been, like all of these great programs that were built up or slowly just get sort of privatized, essentially. So like this fire sale of infrastructure.
Right. What is something you think is overrated?
Well, funny you mentioned the rich people begging to pay more taxes at the beginning of the show. I've been thinking a lot about, you know, rich people doing good things as being overrated. I mean, there's been all these conspiracies about Bill Gates, which obviously I don't buy. And I celebrate what the Gates Foundation does, and I'm impressed by his work. But the real conspiracy is that you have someone who has tens of billions of dollars in the first place and can run some kind of shadow mixture of the World Health Organization and the State Department. It's like, I'm glad he's doing it, because in the abdication of anybody else doing it, it's good that it's happening. But like, how can it not be? How can it be that, you know, the United States, this incredibly rich and powerful country, has basically let an oligarchy, as you mentioned, take control of the functions of the state? I mean, it's no surprise that people are so angry.
Yeah, I mean, he has lobbied, his company has lobbied, all like people who are billionaires have chosen to be billionaires, and they are choosing that and the solutions of them, you know, being basically oligarchs who solve other people's problems over, you know, having a healthy social safety net in its place, one way or another. You know, obviously Bill Gates can't snap his fingers and suddenly we have a great social safety net, but along the way he's made lots of decisions that, you know, are counter to a strong social safety net.
And I also think it's unreasonable to expect people to act strongly against their own interests. I mean, that's why we have a state in the first place. It's supposed to be, you know, to balance the wealth of society in a fair way. And so the idea that it's a solution to have people who are grossly enriched themselves volunteer to de-enrich themselves, I mean, yeah, it seems to be a little bit pie in the sky. So right.
I wonder if those are like the wealthy people there. They seem to be all the wealthy people who didn't manage to get their hands into politics or get them there. They're like, I mean, I could have done it like the other wealthy people, which is to just, you know, blow out the House and Senate with their money and get their jollies off like that.
Fuck the cocks.
Yeah. And finally, what is a myth? What's something people think is true, you know, to be false, or vice versa?
Well, I'm sorry again, I'm a mixture of the times and the topic of my podcast. It's another heavy one. But border violence, beginning with Donald Trump, is something of a myth. I mean, Trump has been extraordinarily horrific, I think, with the encouragement of Stephen Miller, his policy advisor, on policies like family separation, which was actually piloted. It's extraordinary you would pilot a program like that, but piloted in El Paso to test how it worked. Did it put people off from coming? But to focus on Trump as the source of all malfeasance at the US-Mexico border is probably wrong. And in fact, if you go back to 1992, under President Clinton, there was something called Operation Hold the Line, which was the first one of the first efforts to militarize the border after a former cartel lookout who became the U.S. congressman in El Paso before Beto O'Rourke encouraged his Border Patrol agents to form a human wall along the border to try and demonstrate how under strain Border Patrol was and how much they needed more resources, which indeed came from the federal government, and reports suggest were spent on the construction of some physical barriers by a company belonging to a family member of the congressman. Now, I'm not sure if that's true, but that's the report. And going back to the 60s, actually, after the Second World War, there was a shortage of laborers in America, agricultural laborers, industrial laborers. And so the states basically said to Mexico, send us your single men. You know, we'll let them work and we'll send them back at the end of the season with money in their pockets. And this went on till the 60s, at which point there was political pressure saying, you know, Mexicans taking our jobs, send them back. So millions of these men basically were sort of not exactly deported, but sent back to the border and across the border. So the history of the US-Mexico border has been of desire for, you know, Mexican labor, but disclaiming of responsibility. And, you know, it has a lot of parallels with the United States relationship with the African-American community as well.
Yeah, the whole finger pointing of like, yes, the business owners would like the laborers to come there. And then when, you know, as things become more spread out around the country and they're like, oh, well, maybe we move our operations there, reverting to this thing of like, well, that's who's taking the jobs. You know, right. It wasn't me deciding that I would make way more money not paying y'all like regular money. I can go over here where the wages are far more depressed and my margins blow up now. And yeah, I think it is this, it's interesting to watch how it evolves, because I think initially, like, the first Border Patrol was about like finding like illegal Chinese immigrants. Right. So it's always like you see these sort of these organizations or these bureaucracies within the government that are also there to like help sustain certain narratives too, of like the, like, who's the reason for a disenfranchisement that we can point to?
Exactly.
All right, guys, let's take a quick break and then we will get into the stories of the day.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4. Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, It's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh,
yeah. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
And we're back. And so is Disney World. Back open without a hitch. So that's that story. moving on to
nothing
next.
To see.
Nothing to see here.
Good news.
So over the weekend on Sunday, Florida broke the national record for the most new COVID cases in a single state on a single day, over 15,000. That beats even New York at the height of their pandemic. And this is the same weekend that Disney World decided to open back up. A lot of people saw the video last week where they were like, hey, everything's cool. A bunch of their workers or cast members, quote.
Mm-hmm. Loving it.
Yeah, loving it. Just wearing masks and smizing through the masks with the empty park behind them, and just like really giving this like empty eyed reassurance, gestures of reassurance that were incredibly easy for people to re-edit into horror movie trailers just by changing the soundtrack.
The power of music, though.
You know? Yeah, but very, very creepy. So anyways, they went through with it. They opened over the weekend, had most, you know, most cast members were back. About 750 park employees weren't there for the opening. These were the stage performers who aren't allowed to wear masks because they're, I don't know, like Snow White or, you know, playing some character who doesn't have a COVID mask canonically.
Or it'd be like the stunt shows. Right. And like people who like do real like performance, because they're under Actors Equity Union. That's why they're not there.
Got it. And they wanted just better testing for, yeah, you know, because
their union was like, hey, if you want these people to go as a union, we're negotiating for these people, for our members to set foot on your property to work, that there should be, you know, regular testing at the very least. So people know. Like, you know, get some rapid answers so you can get treatment as quickly as possible, quarantine. And it was like, yeah, sorry. I guess you guys just don't have to come back then.
Yeah.
So why? So Disney didn't want to give the test because they're too expensive or because it was too much of a hassle or because they worried about the knowledge amongst the workforce. And what was the reason?
Well, Oz, one thing that you might have missed not being in the United States, but tests are actually bad because they tell you who has it and then your numbers go up. And
oh,
therefore,
I see
and
yes,
people
yes,
start
yes,
to panic and you just don't want that sort of thing.
That's
so.
The sad, yeah. And then the people, I also read that the people who are in the suits are actually under in the Teamsters Union. So like the big Mickey suit people, those are Teamsters, like some of the performers, that's Actors Equity. And yeah, they all had, you know, their own needs. Some were met and some clearly were not by the park in their rush to begin generating revenue. There was every video I saw come out of there over the weekend was nightmarish. The first video I saw was, what could go wrong if I let a balloon, like just let go of my balloon on Main Street?
Right.
And it was like, I don't know. Forgive me, Disney Hive. I don't know the main character with the really long red hair with the green dress, but she was on a horse, and this person's loose balloon, like the little plastic Mickey weight that sort of keeps the balloon from like destroying a child's day fully, like got wrapped around the horse's ankle and it starts like bucking. And it's like, you're just like, oh, no, no, no. Like, this is the first thing I'm seeing. And then there was that, obviously, those two women who became the belles of the ball this weekend.
What were they doing? They were refusing to
They were streamers
wear the mask.
Who this woman said she was having like straight up COVID. So she was like, first she said, I'm violently vomiting. I have like, my blood pressure was 170 over some. It was something so bad, right. But one woman was dismissing it as like a nut allergy. And many people were like,
don't worry, you're just going into anaphylactic shock.
Yeah. But then that was the thing. So they went to go see like the first aid, like sort of hut or whatever. And the woman didn't use her like EpiPen. So it wasn't like that bad. So they also figured, apparently some people were arguing, now this is all anecdotal, that like if you had any kind of incident that would have required an EpiPen, like Disney will just call an ambulance because they don't want any fucking thing to do with someone having some kind of allergic reaction that goes completely left, which I believe, like, because a lot of people in the comments saying like, that's bullshit. Like the second you say you have a nut allergy, people get really, really interested, especially at restaurants at Disney, whatever. Either way, it was clear that even if this woman had a nut allergy, with the things she was saying, like she was in really bad shape and probably should have just left because A, that could suppress your immune system, this, that, and the other, whatever. But it became this whole thing where then these women came back and were like, there's just haters on the internet. They edited it so it like didn't actually tell the full story. It was a nut allergy. But when you watch the whole thing, I don't have like a judgment on whether they did or did not. But if you were like in any situation where your health seemed iffy at all, given the pandemic, you don't want to be at Disney World.
Right. And they kind of went back and kind of caped for Disney and was like, no, nothing to see here, basically, with their follow-up video.
Yeah. And just saying that the other thing is bullshit, just because I said she's so sick, like really sick, y'all, like vomiting everywhere sick. That doesn't mean COVID. Okay. And yes, we have sore throats. But it's not that.
Right. It's just
I think there's something particularly perverse about this incident unfolding at Disney. One of the other things that we sort of look at from across the pond when we think about the States is this idea of utopian communities and the idea of America itself partly as a utopian community at the great cost, obviously, of the original inhabitants. But Disney is this kind of, you know, symbol of a constructed paradise and sort of its descent into a hellscape this weekend with what you guys are describing is quite allegorical, I think, for many reasons.
Nothing, like so much of the writing of reality for the past month has just been so on the nose that it's just like, all right, come on, man. Like this is ridiculous. But yeah, Disney being the capital of, you know, just all the things that are ailing our COVID-19 response is unbelievable. And yet so believable.
The other place that had to stay open was the factories in Juarez, which manufacture things like medical gloves and blood pressure cuffs, and pivoted to trying to make ventilators. And the workers who, many of whom, these murders that are covered in my podcast were for a while called the Maquiladora murders, because so many of the victims worked in these factories or maquiladoras, which actually American owned more than 50%. Anyway, so during COVID, these factories, you know, the workers obviously didn't want to show up for work because the caseload was going through the roof. But the American ambassador to Mexico called the president and said, please don't shut down the maquilas /don't shut down the maquilas because we need the essential goods for our patients and healthcare system. So these workers had to continue going to their jobs to produce goods for the US to use in its own fight against COVID. And I think it's that same sort of extremely unpleasant sort of irony that you get with the Disney World workers who are risking their lives to get sick to create this to create this paradise, but really to create shareholder value.
But the workers in Juarez, it's even like more insidious, because in a way it's like, hey, we need more gear because we've only been exacerbating our own problem with our, you know, straight up ignorance and willful ignorance around this because we didn't want to lose too much money.
Yeah.
And even at some point, if the objective is clear enough to not lose as much money, at that point, don't you sit down and go through all the different permutations of how this goes economically and say, okay, this start-stop version actually is the worst, is going to cost the most money.
Right.
So we shouldn't do that. But even then, there's like this path, like pathological urge to see revenue being generated that even to stop it is too shocking, I think, for like these business owners.
And I think Britain and the US have had amongst the very worst responses, exactly that start-stop thing that you mentioned, where you don't commit to one way or the other. And I was thinking about it earlier. I mean, it's also interesting, those are the two countries where Cambridge Analytica had a very demonstrable role in the election of Trump in America and in Brexit in Britain. And going back to the Gates conspiracy theories as well, you have to wonder if there's something in the Anglosphere liberal culture which makes it particularly susceptible to this utter disturbance of truth. And people, and when you see people fighting in the supermarket, you know, one wearing a mask and the other saying that their, you know, constitutional rights are being perverted by being asked to wear a mask. You think, I mean, it's like this is almost like a parody of the kind of informed debate that the framers would have wanted. And yet it's hard to know how do we come back from this? How do these divisions and extraordinary bifurcated view of the world in the same country, in the same supermarket, how do we possibly get past this?
I think it's just levels of denial. You know, I think for Americans, especially for people in their 50s, they have only known prosperity.
Right.
Only. Even when it was like bad, it wasn't like the Depression where their parents maybe knew that. It's because you almost see like the thing that Americans don't want to accept is that things are so bad that they actually have to cease their normal way of living. And that, I think that's just been the hardest pill for some people to swallow. I think that's why there's this insistence on like being served again. I mean, whether you want to take out the racial dynamics of that or not, but if you just go completely to this like moneyed consumer mindset, it's just like, normal is me going out. Normal is me going here to give someone money. Normal is me going there to pay someone money. And then I get this thing. And then I just spend my money at all these places. And that's what is... that makes me feel normal. And I think when you're confronted with a thing of like, wait, hold on, my government is actually the most backwards thing on the planet right now. Wait, a lot of the history I've been taught is a lie. Wait, some people, depending on how much they're engaging, they could have their realities broken on like 50 different dimensions simultaneously. And I think that may, for some person, be like, ah, no, this is a hoax. I'm not even gonna get close to thinking something is wrong in my like, very, very comfortable existence.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's like that with England, because I know like, because I think World War II, the US comes back and everyone's like, yeah, man, fucking the US fucking did that, man. You're welcome, Earth. And I think that that attitude just is like, a lot of people are still riding that wave, like in terms of nationalism. And I think like, well, in England, like it was different. Like England was in the war. You know, the U.S., aside from Pearl Harbor, it didn't come to the mainland's doorstep where people go, whoa, the place I thought was like the sanctity of my land had been violated by, it has not happened. So I think that's another big thing to get over, is that that's even a situation that's possible in your existence as an American.
Right.
Well, it's funny. The cliche when I was growing up in England was always that Americans don't have a sense of humor, which I think your show definitively proves is not the case, but I mean, in a sense, it's what you're saying is really interesting, because you know we I mean, I hardly count myself as we after living for a decade abroad, but British people have been accustomed to the idea of the British Empire in terminal decline for more than 100 years, and so our national mentality is one of black humor and irony, gallows humor, making fun of ourselves. I mean, it was so hard for me moving to the States to learn like the skills of self-presentation and not telling everyone as soon as I met them that I was completely imbecilic and incompetent. But you know, I think it's interesting. I mean, it's a moment of humility on many fronts for the US, and it's really, really hard to know how to stomach that and how to respond. And I think anger and denial is obviously, you know, is obviously kind of a human response, but it's not a sustainable one.
Yeah. And to that point, like you said, the tone of the UK is sort of, hey, that empire, baby, it's coming down, huh? Yeah. It was a good run. Whereas, like, in the US, man, there's still this fucking, like, they think it's 1945 or some shit. It's really this, we've dominated the whole earth. Because, like, you even hear how other people will even, not, like, separate from this pandemic and everything, how just Americans very flippantly, and this happens in every country, but you see Americans immediately talk about, like, if it's a country they've never heard of, it's just like, oh yeah, that's got to be horrible and awful and blah 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 blah.
Right.
It's the best place. And it's almost like, when without even thinking, it just like goes on this solo of about like, because everything's better here, and so that, I think that frantic like proving of like why USA number one, anytime that comes into question, that's too disruptive for certain Americans' entire sort of, you know, self-created like value that of like what it means to be American.
Well, we'll see what it means to be American, because Disney World has now been open for a while. We've seen the videos come out showing the social distancing rules all being followed 100%, fully. Everybody's crowding and not always wearing masks, and sometimes
it's
it
like
rains
raining,
and everybody has to get underneath the same tarp or whatever. But just the day after Disney World's reopening weekend, we learned that Hong Kong Disneyland would be closing again because there are 52 new cases of COVID there.
They're in the country or in Hong Kong Disney?
I think Hong Kong Disney.
Wow.
Oh, maybe it's, let me check actually.
No, it was probably just Hong Kong, because they're doing the right thing by saying, oh wait, new cases, cut to Florida, 15,300.
Right. Yeah.
It was just in the whole country. It was in Hong Kong.
It was in the whole country. Yeah. So
this is,
we learned that Hong
it's just
Kong.
So,
yeah.
Like, ahead. What do we do? Right. You know, like, it's just such a, it only ends with the car fully crashing into the wall. Like,
right.
And right now it's going so slow that like the bumper is starting to crumple against the wall.
Right.
But the car crash is, we are fully engaged in the car crash.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are in the back seat, and because the shockwave has not reached them back there too, it's also like obscure. You're kind of like, whoa, that wall is pretty close. It's really dark. And when you see this kind of decision making, like, it's hard to ever think that there's any way to be optimistic about this, unless like people really are just like, you know, have the discipline to say, I'm not leaving until scientists are telling me they're like effective, fully effective treatments or a vaccine or something. Because
yeah,
this other stuff is just so grim. And it's just like, people, apparently too many people don't trust the leadership enough to say like, or apply the thinking of like, well, why would it be open if it wasn't safe?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting the comparison with Hong Kong, which obviously has just gone through its own, you know, terrible political crisis where its political system was basically cancelled by China, and is now, you know, a crime punishable by years and years of imprisonment on the mainland to traduce the party. And so, you know, but when you look at China and you look at how, you know, apparently, who knows about the beginning of the virus, but the response more recently, like, it's a strong central authoritarian country, and as a result, like, its ability to impose order on its citizens is greater than, you know, federal Republican United States. And it's hard to know. I mean, it's what scares me is that people will start to look with envy at these more authoritarian systems and say, well, you know, they got it right on COVID, or they have social order. And that's a really slippery slope. So, I mean, I'm really hopeful, but also not knowing what the path is to maintain what's good about, you know, liberal democracy, at the same time as getting past this mentality of like totally disputing objective facts, dismissing all experts, crushing some groups at the expense of others. I mean, it's a scarily unstable moment. And also America is losing its moral authority. There was Mike Pompeo from the State Department was criticizing China's policy towards Hong Kong. And one of the deputy Chinese foreign ministers tweeted, "I can't breathe."
Right. Yeah.
So, yep.
Yeah. Well, then now what?
What do you
and
do?
And what? Yeah. Meanwhile, the president's strategy for dealing with this spike in coronavirus cases and deaths seems to be to talk shit about Dr. Fauci. That seems to be what he's kind of going hard towards. He sent out an Oppo research packet to various journalists about that over the weekend. So well
I did
done.
See on Twitter apparently he's golfed more than he's met with Fauci since March, which doesn't seem like most
the guy's a shitty golfer, Oz. The guy sucks at golfing. So what do you expect him to do?
You should have seen him. He grabbed a sand wedge when we were teeing off. I was like, what the fuck is this? What the fuck is that? He's a fucking clown.
One of the only things to like about Mike Bloomberg's presidential candidacy was that I'm sure you guys saw that video of Donald Trump crawling around on all fours trying to get the golf ball. And anyway, it was a very, very amusing takedown.
I actually didn't see that.
No,
I will go look that up. Well, that might have been banned from us. Here in the
premise is that Trump says one of Trump's attack lines on Bloomberg is that Bloomberg asked Trump to build some golf course in New York or something, and then Bloomberg said, "And that was the only thing we'd ever ask him to build." And there's a picture of him crawling around trying to retrieve this golf ball, which I thought was pretty good.
Meanwhile, we're crashing. We're in a car crash while we're laughing.
Let's take another break, and we'll come back with our white supremacist roundup.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4. Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh,
yeah. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
And we're back. Yeah, let's talk about this white supremacist who was threatening violence online and was caught by police with guns and bombs in his car.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, like, I don't know if he put white supremacist at the very top of his Tinder profile. He might put flat earther or QAnon person, but it's all racist in the end, and all roads tend to lead to white supremacy with most of these political ideologies, if you want to call them ideologies. So yeah, this guy, you know, we've seen a lot of these far right people, particularly who would get caught up in some of the conspiratorial stuff, really making good on threats they make online. You know, there's like a woman who like, and they live stream this stuff too, because they want to show everybody else. There's like a woman who was live streaming her driving to like take out Joe Biden, and she got like arrested. I think she had a bunch of knives or something. And then there was like a dad, I believe in Massachusetts or somewhere, he had his kids in the car and was in a high-speed chase with the police because he had believed the president was trying to communicate to him through the radio and was saying that, like, he really needed a miracle, President Trump, like, while, you know, beyond driving record, like over 100 miles an hour type shit at certain points. So this guy, you know, so I think there's, in certain circles, people seem to be very serious when they're talking about whatever their worldview is or who they believe the villains are in this. There is a man, 32-year-old guy from Pennsylvania, who has now been, you know, arrested. He was making threats about talking about like attacking a Treasury building in Harrisburg and then going to DC to shoot up the CIA headquarters and like take as many of them out before I'm gunned down, essentially. The police spotted his car and pulled him over, and he said he had guns and supplies to make M80 type fireworks, but they found, you know, ammonium nitrate, urea nitrate, like shit to make bombs. Right. And he was headed to, it seems like, to make good on this promise. And this is just sort of part of this, these actions that are really happening in physical space now. And I mean, this guy was already online saying things, taking shots at like Black Lives Matter, black people, you know, scientists, anyone against Trump. So it was one of these things where, you know, I think we also have a pattern. I think to the point you're making on is about Cambridge Analytica, where that there, I'm sure there's tremendous overlap with the Facebook being the like really great breeding ground for a lot of these ways of seeing the world that are compelling people to try and commit violent acts or actually commit violent acts.
Yeah. And also coming back to the idea of the oligarchy, I mean, Facebook and YouTube have all but replaced the media. I mean, we in the podcasting world are some of the last holdouts, I think. And, you know, these are multi-billion dollar companies who control the flow of information like no other company in the history of the world, let alone media, make billions and billions of dollars from advertisements against the content they host, and continue to be able to claim that they don't have any responsibility for what happens on their platforms. And I mean, I find it pretty close to sickening, actually, which is like, you know, the argument would be, oh, if you regulate what's on these platforms, you know, you confess that they're publishers and then you take responsibility for their content. And if you take responsibility for the content, you're no longer a platform. And that makes free speech much harder. And in fact, maybe you never would have had an Arab Spring or the beginning of, you know, the Black Lives Matter protests on social media if these platforms had to take responsibility for all of the content that they host. So it's not like a straightforward, easy answer. But I do think that there's something extremely venal and greedy about the people, the richest people in society who own these companies, not making some kind of sacrifices to ensure that, you know, this mass brainwashing and violence. I mean, as you say, like, there, I'm sure, in fact, we know there's a hardcore of violent white supremacists, neo-Nazi extremists. But I think there's also a bunch of these mildly unhinged, tragic characters who find something to believe in and get seduced and behave in ways which are completely alien even to them. And I think it's really, really perverse and toxic. And yet another thing I don't really see any particular way out of for the time being.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about an article last week that was really, like, in a very serious way threatening, claiming civil war was inevitable, and just like all these different scenarios where after the 2020 election, they just see one side or the other. It was pretty terrifying. It was a right-wing news outlet.
In El Paso, the Walmart shooter, I mean, it's no coincidence that Trump chose El Paso to basically kick off his re-election campaign a couple of years ago. And then shortly after that, this shooter drove 8 hours from somewhere near Dallas to go and kill people at the Walmart in El Paso, which is, you know, largely frequented by Hispanic people and day trippers from Juarez. And it's this language of the great replacement and all of this sort of online hate which, you know, manifests itself. And people in Juarez, you know, who'd always seen El Paso on the other side of this fence as a place of, you know, safety and respite. 50 people have been murdered this month in July in Juarez, by the way. They were so horrified, apparently, by what happened in El Paso, because it was like, even there, even this US, this like shining city across the fence where with all its problems, like basically you're safe from arbitrary violence and death as you go about your business, you know, is under attack from crazed shooters. And so yeah, it's distressing, but I think the internet plays a big role in it, unregulated internet.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like, yeah, the propaganda high is just PR propaganda high is wearing off.
Yeah.
Where, like, to anyone's point, you, Oz, or someone in Mexico, the perception of this country has been so carefully manufactured and built on the backs of like great media offerings that creates this whole perception. But we're getting to that point where the real problems have gone unaddressed for so long that veneer has just worn completely down. And I think that's also one of the reasons why some people, even on the right, are also just as incensed by everything, because they probably also are slowly being like, but I thought everything was okay here and everything was gonna be okay here. And hardship is something I would never know for a very specific group of Americans, because that's most people don't think like exactly that. But there is that thing too, where you're looking at it and like, hold on a second. If I'm willing to not think that the CDC is lying about disinformation and deaths, I would find myself supporting a party that is completely lost it. And I'm only now coming around to it. It's, yeah, I think there's, again, many, many truths are becoming clear too, but there's also that piece that I think many, you know, many of us buy into the idea of the exceptional American existence.
American exceptionalism is, yeah, just with regards to kind of the tactics of the right and there being this massive double standard, does seem like I noticed on during the Black Lives Matter protests, and particularly like a couple of the days when local Los Angeles media was actually paying attention to them, there was a guy who drove through a crowd in a Mini Cooper, but like there's video of it happening live, and he misses a 4-year-old girl by like an inch legitimately. And, you know, they chased him down. They put him in handcuffs, but like you never really heard anything else about that. And there's just all sorts of car ramming instances and videos. And this is one of those things that seems like it's an open, like on the right. So In January 2017, the Daily Caller shared a video of several vehicle rammings writing, "Study the technique, it may prove useful in the next 4 years." And that was shared by Fox Nation. The GOP proposed bills to make it possible to shield drivers who hit protesters from charges. So it just seems like
it's... that recent?
That was in 2017.
Wow.
So
after Charlottesville, when was Charlottesville?
Yeah, after Charlottesville.
Yeah.
So it's just it's one of those.
None
things
are law though. None of those are law.
They were proposed.
But the intent is clearly there because it's another way of de-racializing, you know, racial violence.
Yeah.
And like making that law.
Yeah. So I don't know. It just kind of goes with this. The right is either planning, like this is something that is imminent, that they're going to, you know, stage some large scale attack, or, you know, already in the early stages of that. And we're just kind of holding them to a different standard because, I don't know, because we always have held white supremacists to a lower standard than other forms of terrorists, like, you know, the Oklahoma City bombing, which killed a bunch of children in a daycare center, and people, you know, there wasn't some like massive war on white supremacy after that, or on right wing homegrown terror cells. It was just kind of, you know, a thing that came and went, and they caught Timothy McVeigh and executed him, and all good.
It's the preservation of the concept of being exceptional. You know, like if too much attention is paid to that, then everyone has to accept that America has a problem with white supremacist terror, like really accept that. And I think law enforcement knows that, legislators know that, activists know that, most people who have engaged with all kinds of human beings in this country have been like, no, that's probably real. Yeah. But it's there is this, you know, by not confronting these things, we can pretend everything's okay. And now we're like, we're playing this same pattern of behavior out to its worst possible degree now, because it's like, rather than accepting that this government has completely failed its response, and now it's time for serious, serious action to correct that, because the last attempt was a failure. We're not approaching things like that. It's like, nope, nothing's wrong, even if everything is quite, you know, literally dying before your eyes.
I watched a documentary a few days ago called the Nuremberg Sting. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it was basically about an FBI operation in 2009 in Nuremberg, New York, which is one of the state's most impoverished cities and largely African American. And the FBI ran a sting operation there where they sent a confidential informant who was originally from Pakistan to go to the mosque and recruit men into an Islamic terror plot to bomb a synagogue in Riverdale. And, you know, the guy was offering these guys, I think, $200,000 each. You know, these are men who, you know, don't know where their next rent check is coming from. One of them was, in fact, I think, basically homeless. Only one of the four had ever even been to the mosque. But this guy, you know, told them they were each going to get $200,000, and they showed up to do the plot. The FBI swooped in with 100 officers, arrested them, and said they'd interrupted a serious Al-Qaeda cell in the US. And I mean, it was so obviously confected, so obviously it's almost like, talked about Orwell, but this like McCarthyism when it comes to like radical Islam in the US. And on the other hand, as you guys say, when it comes to white supremacy in the far right, which I know is something that, you know, Robert Evans and Behind the Bastards and Behind the Police looks at, you know, it's this absolute denial of the interconnectedness of these networks. It's always a lone wolf. It's always somebody with mental health issues. It's always a one-off. Well, it's not. why don't we want to confess that? Because it pulls at the edifice of this like fair, racially equal society that, you know, that is obviously a fiction.
Yeah. And I mean, the ideology that underlies, you know, the things we're talking about on the right is also, you know, as Behind the Police, the Robert Evans miniseries with Prop, talked about is also the ideology that a lot of American police forces was founded on, and, you know, is still far more prevalent than I think a lot of people realized prior to this year.
But it wasn't all bad. I mean, the founding fathers, I just saw that musical Hamilton. they seem like a really cool bunch.
Something went wrong
between then and now. Because I'm pretty sure we were on the right track.
Yeah.
Let's always remember the founding slavers, fathers.
Right.
One of the other things I always think is interesting is what are the unintended consequences of the absolutely vast military-industrial complex in the US? And one of the consequences, obviously, tactical gear, armored vehicles, all kinds of extremely over-the-top equipment making it into the hands of local police forces because it needs to be sold on after the military no longer require it or it's surplus. So there are all these, like, there's the structural racism, and then there's all these trends around it, around like militarization and other forces, where you just have this sort of whirlpool of hell coming together. And I mean, not like in Britain. I mean, there have been terrible cases of racism in the police and you know, police malfeasance. But you know, in the States, you know, when you go to a protest or whatever it is, you have this constant sense of being, you know, even as a white man in opposition to the police, or like a potential suspect or a potential criminal. And I've never really encountered that anywhere else in the world, except I guess for China. But you know, it's a weird feeling that the police aren't part of the citizenry. It's like, just strange. It's strange to see, even after 10 years, like this tightening of the chest you get from seeing like another citizen who happens to be wearing a uniform. Like this is not a good feeling.
Yep.
Yeah.
Not a good feeling.
It's true.
Tightening of the chest. All right. Well, let's talk about the millionaires who are going to save us all. No, that's, I mean, this is kind of the oligarchy thing we were talking about, but some millionaires are begging to be taxed more to help out the poors. It's called Millionaires for Humanity. It's
Millionaires for Humanity.
It's a new group of concerned wealthy
shitty
people.
Shitty band.
At least it acknowledges that these millionaires giving a portion of their wealth is not the answer, and that they like that there needs to be permanent taxation.
The way this letter is written, though, it's brilliant PR, because it's also a very fancy, please don't look up PDF schematics on how to build guillotines with, you know, things you can buy at Home Depot. But this also sounds like a really fun way to say, like, we hear you guys. We hear you. We have way too much money. We have way too much money. Want to give you some of that money because we realize we have a lot of money. So it's saying, as COVID-19 strikes the world, millionaires like us. I'm already laughing.
That's very good.
I'm already fucking, this is real. This is verbatim. What is it? Millionaires like us have a critical role to play in healing our world. No, we are not the ones caring for the sick in intensive care wards. We are not driving the ambulances that will bring the ill to hospitals. We are not restocking grocery store shelves or delivering food door to door. But we do have money. Lots of money that is dead. Yes, I'm not joking. This is straight up.
We do have money. Lots of it.
Money that is desperately needed now and will continue to be needed in the years ahead as our world recovers from this crisis. Today, we understand. Today, we, the undersigned millionaires, ask our governments to raise taxes on people like us immediately, substantially, permanently. Mm. And, you know, the letter goes on to say that, like, they get it, man. They're like, look, we get it.
Bro.
Hey, there's no fucking net out there. These people that are actually, the way I'm passively making my money off of their labor, like, I realize, okay, maybe there's a way to give some of this back. And I don't know who many of these people are. The fact that I didn't recognize many of the signed millionaires bums me out, because you're like, you're hoping it's the people with like the lot of money. Like, yeah, where's the Billionaires for Humanity? Not to shade the millionaires, you know, all love to millionaires and anybody with means wanting to help, but there's also, I'm like, I'm not seeing some bigger names on here. what was very interesting was saying, we owe a huge debt to the people working on the front lines of this global battle. Most essential workers are grossly underpaid for the burden they carry. They get that part. And then what they say to sign off, our interconnectedness has never been more clear. We must rebalance our world before it is too late. There will not be another chance to get this right. I feel like that's true.
Yeah. I think they just saw the Lorax because that is right there. You know, they nailed it.
What's the Lorax?
To Dr. Seuss books.
I mean, I know, but what's the, like, what's the message?
There's literally, like, it ends with them being like, unless you make a change right now, the problem.
Cue like, Fat Boy Slim right here, yeah, right yeah. now. You know,
right here.
Because right now, tax me right now.
You guys are going to be noticing a lot of children's movies bleeding into my references over the next month.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, look, now I'm not going to look foolish at my Dr. Seuss dinner parties I go to. I don't know. I like the momentum of they're trying to add to this movement because, yes, this is actually one of the biggest things that needs to be addressed right now. There are many things that are just so easy to be like, yeah, we got to change that right away. Like, right. You know, I talked about this last show, like if you make more money on unemployment than you do employment, then there's no reason to have a job unless it is going to make you something that feels like a living wage. So like what? That should be the easiest thing, but again, it requires a lot of people to go into their pockets, I guess. The billionaires for humanity who aren't signed to this.
Mm. Definitely better than the celebrities that led by Gal Gadot singing Imagine.
Yeah. Or that monologue, I'm responsible.
Oh God, that was something else, wasn't it?
Give it to me one more time. It's clear that you're reading. Could you not move your eyes?
Okay, sorry. How about this?
First take, best take.
I'm responsible. I'm responsible.
That was very good.
Those performances were so good.
Oh my God. But how do you, as like a famous or rich person who like genuinely doesn't suffer these like terrible social ills that most people are encountering right now, like how do you say something without coming off like a terrible hypocrite? Like who's have you guys seen any examples of people who've like done a good job of it?
I mean, I don't know. It's all about how loud you are about it.
Mm.
You know, like, cause I think there are many ways for you to be philanthropic and right. be anonymous and yep. be effective. And if you actually had the means, you could probably put together some pretty brilliant people to figure out how to do something like that and say like, I'm about to put $8 billion into this.
Yep.
But like, how do we do this? And I don't want anyone to know or whatever. Not that it's impossible, but I think when you sign on it and it's like, we have so much money, like we gotta help. I mean, that feels like a cool scene in a Disney movie, like when you're like you're turning the second act. But like, I don't know. Yeah, I don't. I'm not sure what to even do because really, it's gonna take the legislators to even create those laws, and there can be a ton of people who are like. It's almost like, well, I want to give the money away, but they won't take it. And I'm not going to figure out what to do with it beyond that. Like I could pay people who work for me more as a way to do that immediate, but I'd rather just get taxed, you know? And that's why I signed this letter.
Yeah. Mm.
So it's hard to know what, you know, cause like you could do better if you just said it was a, you know, a policy of all the companies that fall under your multinational conglomerate to pay living wages and be like, hey, sorry to the stockholders. But this, we're not running it like this anymore.
Oz, it has been a pleasure having you on the Daily Zeitgeist. Where can people find you, follow you, hear you, all that good stuff?
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it. I have a newly minted Twitter handle. At Oz Voloshin. and me and Monica are doing a Reddit AMA on r/podcasts on Wednesday at noon EST to talk about what we learned in Forgotten about what's happening to the women in Juarez. And honestly, you know, their fate connects in so many ways to all the things we've been talking about, impunity, structural violence, and you know, in particular, what happens when you keep a group of people poor because it suits you to have their cheap labor, and then don't do anything to protect them. I mean, it's not necessarily, you know, it's also a true crime podcast. So we take you through a mystery, and we have FBI agents and DEA agents and activists, and we talk to some of the victims' families, which are very profound. But the take home of the conversation is really a mirror to the US from a city which is less than a mile away, but which kind of is the logical conclusion of all the bad behavior, I think, that we've been discussing today.
Mm. And is there a tweet or some other work of social media you've been enjoying?
Yes, actually, my dear friend and co-host of Sleepwalkers, my other podcast that I do on the iHeart Podcast Network, which is about technology, added a very amusing, I thought, tweet, which is also quite apropos of what we've been discussing, where she said, drumroll, nobody dot every brand colon in times like these, which I thought was very apt in terms of the hypocrisy of corporate activism.
Mm. Miles, where can people...
In times of record corporate profits.
Yeah, exactly.
No hero bonuses, though. Yeah. No hero bonuses.
Miles, where can
fuck
people...
Fuck a hero straight in their dumb hero face. I'm sorry.
Find
yes,
you,
me.
Follow you.
So before I give all that information where you can find me, I do want to raise something. Super producer Anna Hosne was putting me onto it, and everybody who listens to the show should as well. You know, the Trump administration, I don't know if you've heard this, but they proposed some pretty awful regulations to the asylum system in this country, where, you know, vulnerable people in the LGBTQIA community, people with HIV AIDS, all kinds of vulnerable people try and enter this country because the living situation where they are is too violent. And unfortunately, it's an untenable living situation for them. These regulations that the Trump administration have proposed are essentially rip out the entire concept of people being able to seek asylum in this country. And because there's been a lot of lawsuits around this to try and keep this from happening, but there is one way that people can help in a very easy way. You can submit a comment to the administration that when there are these regulations that are happening, that the government, like sort of the policy that they read and respond to comments that are made, if they are unique. And that's where the difference here. What we need is people to go to this website to leave a comment. It's very easy. We'll leave all this information in the footnotes. The longer the comment, the better. But it's like anything. Just like with members of Congress, when they start seeing form comments that are copy and pasted from other things, they don't think it's real. They just think it's an email spam campaign. So please type anything. As long as it's truthful about what your feelings are and giving comment on your, you know, opposition to these regulations would be great, because that could actually help buy people some serious, serious time. So please do that and check the footnotes for how you can get involved with that. Me, Twitter, Instagram, even PlayStation Network. Maybe you'll catch me on FIFA or Pez. Who knows? Miles of Gray. And let's see, some tweets. Oh, also my other podcast, 420 Day Fiance, where I take a break from the ills of our reality and I dive into trash reality television, 90 Day Fiance specifically. Some tweets I like. First one is from at the Deserina, from Deserina Boscovich, says, her tweet is, match your... wear a damn mask energy with pay people to stay home energy and cancel rent energy. Mm. Because that's really, yes, I think that's, many people are just limiting it to our thinking of wear a mask, but we're always saying like, we need a fucking safety net though too. That's yep. How that works. And with all the banks and people be like the rainy day, the landlord argument that we've seen time and time and again, not being asked of banks or these companies when they're asking for bailouts, I think that's another more energy we need to keep going. Another one is just this ridiculous video. It's from at Baker Bone. It says, just when you thought things couldn't get any worse, 2020 taught bears how to use nunchucks. And it's like a bear at a zoo, but it is just swinging these nunchucks around, and it's doing a little bit of nunchuckery on it. I'm not going to lie. So it gave me a laugh. So shout out to
wow.
The nunchuck bear. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing with, cancel rent and, you know, the unemployment is going to stop at, I think, in August or late July. Like,
yeah, if they don't put another bill forward,
and I think the GOP is like pushing to do that, to just let it happen. And like, there's already like record long lines at food banks. Like, that's going to keep happening. It's going to get really, really bad.
And then, because the U.S. also has a really great habit of calling people's lack of access and lack of safety net, and calling that crime. You know, rather than acknowledging people's desperation, then I'm sure that could fit into some kind of narrative going into the election too. If you just have more destitute people doing things and trying to weave that into, and I mean, I don't know what we can do. I mean, Trump's the guy, man. Law and order, because he's screaming that shit like it's going out of style.
Some tweets I've been enjoying. Solomon Giorgio, former guest, tweeted, "I pretended to wash my hands until I was 10 years old and I was in the gifted program. We shouldn't reopen schools during a pandemic." I remember that, like just running my hands underwater, sometimes just letting the water run near my hands for no reason other than laziness of I didn't want to dry them off.
Other thing was hand washing was incentivized. So it was never because it was good habits. It was because I would get some shit.
I have to drag my kids kicking and screaming to like wash their hands after and before meals. Like, and
you know what changed it for
they
me?
They have visible dirt on their hands.
Yeah, right. Just like like earthworms crawling over their palms. Like, yo, this is a joke now. You got worms in your fingers. Like, this is, you got dirt hands.
What changed it for you?
The foaming soap.
The foaming soap is great. I hated bar soap a little bit more. Yeah.
I hated touching a bar of soap as a kid. I just remember that. And then whenever I would travel to Japan, and like back when the first automated soap dispensers came out, like in the late 80s and shit, I remember foam came out. I was like, yo, I will wash my hands like this. Fuck a bar.
I do remember being grossed out by the bar as well, with the kind of like the cracked bar with like grime in it. I was like, that can't be a better option.
Which is so weird, because then we're like here, like clearly we're like we like things that are clean, but we're like, I don't know though, washing my hands with that too far.
When
for
there's
me.
Actual visible dirt on the soap, it does seem like how is this helping anybody?
I got into arguing with my dad about that. Because I was like, but it's dirty. And he's like, it's soap. And I'm like, then why is there dirt on it? And he's like, because it could. And I just could. I was too dumb to like engage him on a like a one level up intellectually. So I just kept going, well, if it's soap and it's clean, why is it dirty? The defense rests, Your
it's
Honor.
It's true. You were actually right, I think, because it's not like soap just kills germs. Soap just makes germs slip off your hands. It gets them slippery.
Shout out to all emulsifiers out there.
Yeah. Also, Charlene de Guzman tweeted, at the end of every night, there's the disappointing moment where I'm just like, well, I guess that was the day then.
Damn, that's real.
So real.
Were you almost like, was that the day? Was that a day?
Damn. She's really funny. Char Starlene. You can find me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song we ride out on miles. What is that going to be today?
This is going to be so there's this album that came out with Terrace Martin, Robert Glasper, Ninth Wonder, Kamasi Washington, Felix. If you're like into new jazz, and these guys are all monsters from the deep, like new jazz lagoon, and Ninth Wonder is a producer, is a fantastic producer. So they had an album come out called Dinner Party recently, and this is a track, because we were talking about essential workers, first responders, this track is actually called First Responders, with Kamasi Washington.
Love Kamasi Washington. The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for this morning. We'll be back this afternoon to tell you what's trending, and we'll talk to you then. Bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.
something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.